Well, today we are finishing up our series, Won't You Be My Neighbor? And I think there are very few people have emulated what it looks to love people, care for people, draw people together quite like Fred Rogers. In fact, the more I learned about him, the worse I felt as a human being, honestly, because he just was so amazing, something to aspire to and find the source of that love and kindness so I could be a little bit more like him and his hero, Jesus. Well, today, I want to talk about something we haven't addressed yet, which is the trolley. The trolley was a mechanism that Fred Rogers used to transport the audience from the real world to an imaginary world where he felt like he could drill down, dig down, and talk about how we relate to just life, the challenges of life, the difficulties of life. And he was asked one time when they did a documentary on him in Pittsburgh, how to describe himself. And he described himself as an emotional archaeologist. He says, I must be an emotional archaeologist because I like looking for the roots of things. The roots of behavior, why I feel certain ways about certain things. And you can kind of see that in all the stories we're at, how he knew a lot about himself. He would dig down to, why is this so joyful? Why was that such a big deal? Why was that victory so important to me? Other times it's, why did I react? Why did I get angry? He would dig in and ask people about their sadness or their successes and everything in between. He did that not only to those close to him, but those he barely knew, as we saw in the series, like Tom Janod and others. He was an emotional archaeologist who cared about the deeper lives of the people around him. And yet he also tried to do it for his entire audience. One of the most stunning things happened during the first year of his program. It was still during the black and white years, and he opened up an episode by bringing out Daniel the Tiger. And as I said earlier, it looked a lot bigger on Amazon. Daniel the Tiger comes out, and he's playing peekaboo with Lady Aberlin. And they get to the end of that, and here's somewhat what happens. Hi, Lady Aberlin. Hi, Daniel. How are you doing? I'd like to ask you a question, but first, could you blow up this balloon for me? Well, sure, I'd love to do that. Now, can you let the air out? Already? Yeah, I want to ask you a question. Okay. What happened to all the air that was inside? Well, the little air that was in there kind of came out here in the big air. What about your air? My air? Yeah, why, when the air comes out of us, does it lead to us not being filled back up? No, Daniel. When we push air out of us, we then pull more air in. Let me show you. See? What does assassination mean? 2 days after Robert Kennedy was assassinated, he did a show about assassination starting with a balloon, with Daniel the Tiger saying out loud what everybody was talking about in the news. Well, have you heard that word a lot this week? Yeah. Everybody's talking about it. What does it mean? Well, it's kind of when somebody kills somebody else in a surprise way. That's what happened, you know. That man killed that other man. Yeah. Everybody's talking about it, aren't they? Too much talking about it. Well, do you want to talk about some more? No, I don't. I just wanted to ask. Well, a bunch of us are going to go have a picnic. You want to come with us? No, I think I want to be alone. Okay, well, I'm going to go to the picnic, and I'll come back, and we can talk some more. Okay. And with that, the trolley left Imagination Land and made its way back to Fred Rogers, who said, "I know most of us are thinking about assassination of what happened 2 days ago. And I'm very concerned about violence and our kids' exposure to it. Little kids can only handle so much, and yet they need to know how to talk about what's going on in life and going on in the news. And for some of us, we need to have times of quiet to deal with it. Others of us, we need as a family to go and have a picnic or walk by the river. But do it together as you're grieving together." And 45 years ago, whatever that was, in 68, he helped people process as a nation an assassination. And how about you, but there's very few places you could go in the last week without hearing about assassination with some of the same concerns. I've talked to many of you. Concerns about, do we have freedom of speech, and why are things so divisive, and why does the gun seem to be the answer all the time and every week hearing a tragedy? What does it look like for each of us to give some space to ourselves, to our friends, to our kids, a preschool program, to ask questions and talk about what's really going on, the fear, the sadness, the frustration, the anger, the injustice, whatever it is? An emotional archaeologist, someone who can dig deeper into your life. Don't we all need that? That might be a spouse, it might be a friend, it might be a parent, but we need someone to find out what's really going on inside of us, on the good days and in the hard ones. I want to teach how to say a word today in the spirit of Fred Rogers. There it is, the Greek word. Spankanizomai. Can you say that? We'll try. Let's try it. Spankanizomai. I like the way you say that. Spankanizomai. It's a word that means compassion. It's a word that means being an archaeologist to the people's needs around you. And it's the word we're going to learn today about how to dig deeper and have others dig deeper into your life. Let's start with one. The importance of digging deeper before you move forward. How do you dig deeper? Jesus one day looks out at a crowd of people. It says when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion. That's the word, spankanizomai. So what does it mean? Well, it means a gut-level compassion. It's a gut-level desire. I got to step up. I got to fix this. I got to get involved in that. But what motivated this gut-level empathy, the spankanizomai? Well, he saw the crowd of people were weary, just emotionally drained from life and Rome being in charge and all the chaos in the culture. And they were scattered, trying to find direction. They're almost like sheep, Jesus says, without a shepherd. And he so wanted to step in, to fix, to step up, to help give some direction to their life. An emotional archaeologist. Not only that, in another biography we have of Jesus, he uses the same word to talk about people's physical needs. Jesus called on his disciples and says, "I have spankanizomai on the multitude," a different crowd, because they've been continuing with me for 3 days, and they got nothing to eat. So in the first one, he cared about their soul, their weariness, their scatteredness. This time, he cares about their physical needs. They continue to have nothing to eat. I don't want to send them away hungry, lest they faint on the way. What does it look like for us to, yes, stand up against injustice and call evil what it is, but also to have a compassion for the people who are hurting around us as well? I think we could all use some of that. Mr. Rogers called it this way. He talked about treating our neighbor the way ourselves. Let me show you this great quote from Fred Rogers, one of the last couple we'll look at today. "All we're ever asked to do in this life is to treat our neighbor, especially our neighbor who's in need, exactly as we would hope to be treated ourselves." And as we've seen in the series, it's just one story after another of somebody who had spankanizomai for all kinds of people, from journalists to executives to little kids and everything in between. If you were here with us the first week, we showed a video of a Fred Rogers meeting Jeff Erlanger. He was in a wheelchair, and he wanted to have Jeff talk about his story and how he ended up in a wheelchair. And then he and Jeff sang a song, "I Like You Just the Way You Are," and it was just a beautiful moment in TV and a beautiful moment for us watching it 4 or 5 weeks ago. Well, to pick up that story, Jeff continued to feel very bullied most of his adolescence and into high school years, And Fred Rogers didn't just use him as a gimmick for a show. He befriended him. They began to send letters back and forth. And for years, he helped him with bullying and helped him to remember who he was and not to listen to the voices around him, and really shaped Jeff's life. In fact, when Mr. Rogers was given a 20-year award for his, I think it was an Emmy, but his 20-year award, the big surprise was that Jeff came wheeling out with the award to hand it to him. And Fred had not seen him in many, many years, though they'd corresponded via mail, and he just threw his arms around him and said, "Jeff, it is so good to see you." Somebody who didn't just dig into his life one time on a TV show, but somebody who cared about him and befriended him and walked with him through the challenges of life. Todd Janod told a story about when he was following Fred Rogers for that news article. They went to a Pittsburgh hospital, and there's a young man there who had cerebral palsy, a young kid, all those years of just sitting and not being able to move and do all the things his friends did. He'd become angry and become embittered, but he really wanted to see Mr. Rogers. And Mr. Rogers came in. His mom was a little nervous. How might this go? How might he react? They talked for a little bit. They interacted a bit. And Tom records that Fred Rogers got down to talk to him and said, "Would you mind praying for me?" And this little kid, who'd had people pray for him his whole life, had never been asked to pray for someone else. "I'd love to pray for Mr. Rogers." And the whole dynamics changed as this kid prayed for Mr. Rogers and his family and his TV show. And they left the room, and Tom, the kind of cynical news reporter, turns to Fred Rogers and says, "Is that kind of that was a clever gimmick right there to get his eyes off himself by praying for you? Is that why you did it?" Fred's like, "No. I figured anyone who's been through what he's been through must be close to God. I wanted and needed his prayers." Whew. He also often got into people's lives through humor. They loved and had a lot of joy on the show. Sometimes when he was taking off his shoes and singing his little song at the very beginning, what some of the people on set would do, some of his buddies, is they would replace his size, whatever it was, mine are 13s, but they would replace it with size 6s. He'd be in the middle of singing the song, "Won't you be, won't you, oh, oh," and he couldn't finish the song, and he'd burst out laughing, everybody have a good laugh. He'd open up the closet to get into his sweaters, and stuff would come tumbling down. He'd ad-lib songs. They made it more than just a job. They made a community where people cared about each other and laughed and had joy together as they gathered together. He took the time to dig deeper with people before he moved forward. I think it's one of the things which us guys get a bad rap sometimes because, oh, you just want to fix it, you just want to fix it. There's something beautiful about wanting to fix it. There's something beautiful about saying, "I can see you're in pain, I see that's causing you trouble, I want to step in and step up." So don't lose that strength. Just add to it, let's dig deeper first. Let's make sure we've diagnosed the problem accurately. Maybe the problem is how they feel about it, not fixing it. So don't lose that strength of gut-level empathy, but before we put into action, let's just dig a little deeper to understand a little better, to spang kanis amai. What you may not know is that Fred Rogers worked with the top psychologist in his day. He was personal friends with Dr. Spock. I never followed Dr. Spock, but my parents talked about it all the time. So apparently I'm a result of Dr. Spock. Top children's practices in his day. And Fred Rogers and he worked together to make sure that how he communicated with families, with development, came from the best practices at the time. He wanted in his job, in his career, to have a gold standard, a platinum standard to how he did work. Man, who doesn't want that? We just put on a children's program with a bunch of puppets. No, he wanted to be the top way to love and develop kids. He was also good friends with Eric Erickson. If you remember this from maybe undergrad, Eric Erickson was a psychologist, very, very famous. I'll kind of refresh you on him if you don't remember him. But he was alive at the same time Fred Rogers was. They worked together on child and adult development, and they established what's called the stages of psychosocial development. Eric Erickson was also a Christian, grew up in a Lutheran family, I believe, and they want people to know how to develop, how to understand at different stages what you need to emphasize in yourself and the people around you. How can we dig deeper into the people around us and into ourselves? When a child's an infant, how do we work on trust versus mistrust? That's the most important thing. Can they trust you? That's what we're trying to pour into the young lives. Early childhood, we're teaching kids autonomy. Are they working with your kids or grandkids? You want them to learn autonomy and not always covered in shame and guilt, but to learn how to take initiative, to be their own person, to move from parallel play to cooperative play. For preschool, you're moving from initiative versus guilt. How do we initiate and not just get stuck in cycles? School age, how do we teach industry versus inferiority with all the pressures that come from the school age? And as he wrote these letters, he was trying to help kids dig into their lives to help not get caught up in inferiority, because kids can be mean and nasty, and so can our culture. And this is fascinating, and it's written in the 60s, that when our kids are teenagers, the most important thing they're going to learn is their identity. And the biggest thing they can lose themselves in is role confusion. So helping young lives, teenagers in particular, align themselves to the truth of who they are and how they were made, and to reject messages of confusion that might take them off the path. This is a critical stage in people's lives to understand identity versus role confusion. Young adults, we learn intimacy versus isolation. So just always when the level of loneliness in our society today, how many of us, because of Netflix and TVs and everything else, is just less and less connection. Yet the most important thing we need as young adults is to learn intimacy and connection versus just isolation. As a middle adult, generativity versus stagnation. You hit mid-age and beyond, and things are going really well. You're at your top earning years. But are you just coasting? Are you just kind of stagnating? Or generativity, you're finding new challenges. Are you finding a way generativity means to invest in the next generation? Maybe you move into a mentoring role. You find out, how can I take what's been given to me and develop other people? That if you don't learn generativity, you're going to result in stagnation, and how important that is at that stage of your life and development. And lastly, as you approach that final phase of your life, it's maturity. He says the difference between what he calls ego integrity and despair. There comes a certain point in your life, you look back and you start seeing more clearly how you made a lot of mistakes. And some you can reconcile with, and some you can't. You just can't ever get back your 20s. You can't ever get back your 30s. And that could lead to despair. But ego integrity is realizing, you know what, I need to apologize for that, I need to make up for that, but it's also a sense of acceptance that I did the best I could during the phase I had. I'm not going to live in despair. I'm actually going to accept where I am and find joy in the next decade, making the next decade my best decade. They were all about trying to help all of us dig deeper and then move forward. But see, archaeology requires an archaeologist. We don't need something, we don't need an equation, we don't need a book, we need someone in our life. Someone who asks you about your day, someone who digs deeper. That's why we do authentic manhood, that's why we have women's studies. Beyond what we do here on Sunday, we want to connect with one another. We want to be with one another. We want someone who cares about and even knows what's really going on with you. We all need a someone. Archaeology requires an archaeologist. Real human beings in our life asking about us. And certainly more than that, we want to know that the one who created us cares about us. Fred Rogers explains how important it is to be present with people around us. Be that someone that can connect with people. Let me show you this quote of what he says. He says, the most important thing that you're able to do one-on-one, you and I with each other, at the moment, we're able to be with one another. If we can be present to the moment with the person we happen to be with, that's what's important. And yet, aren't we all guilty of kind of half-listening while we're looking at our phone, half-listening while watching TV? I'm guilty as charged. The most important thing we can do is be that archaeologist who's present with the person we're with. One of the greatest examples of this and what makes Christianity so unique is Christianity, unlike other religions where God watches, God gives moral codes, God gives things to do, in Christianity, God uniquely became one of us, became present with us. One guy's writing to describe Jesus in Hebrews, and he says, we do not have a high priest. What's a high priest? A priest is someone who talks to God about the needs of people, and then he talks to people about what God has to say. It's a mediator. So we do not have a mediator who cannot sympathize with our weakness. To which you're like, that sounds like bad grammar. I remember, that's a double negative. In Greek, when you use a double negative, it's like putting an exclamation point on the positive. In English, you'd be like saying, we definitely, for sure, unbelievably, like nothing else, have a mediator who can sympathize with us. Why? Because God didn't watch from a distance. He came, became a man. He's walked in our shoes. He knows what it's like in our weakness. He knows what it's like to be hurting. He knows what it's like to have people betray you. As you think about Charlie Kirk and all things that have happened last week, what does God know about any of that? Did you know that Jesus had his cousin, John the Baptist, who spoke out about certain things politically that Jesus didn't, like the fact that Herod, the king of the area, had decided to steal his own brother's wife? Did you know that John the Baptist, Jesus' cousin, was grabbed by that leader and beheaded? See, Jesus knows what it's like to be in a culture of injustice and pain. He can sympathize with our weaknesses. He understands our pain, our yearning. He understands. Why does he fix it yet? I don't know why, but he says he will eventually. But until he fixes it, he says he can sympathize with us. He can be with us. Also, every time you've been tempted, in every point of temptation, he was in those temptations. He knows what it's like to tempt to be angry, tempt to get mad, tempt to be impatient. He's felt all that, and yet, without sin, he didn't give in to it. If you need access to someone to help with your anger, or help you with your impatience, or help you with being more compassionate when you run out of it, you've come to the right place, he says. This guy did it. He did what you aspire to do. Jesus was God, and you look at his life, you're like, oh my goodness, he gets mad at the right times. He has compassion at the right times. The word sympathy means to enter someone's world, to stand shoulder to shoulder in someone's fight, feeling their grind like it's your grind. I heard a beautiful picture of that this week. A grandpa who attends our church was out playing with his kids in the pool. One of the granddaughters was 3 years old. She had her goggles on. She'd climbed up to go down the slide into the pool. And as she was just about come down to grandpa, they look and they turn. They see coming out the back door was grandma. And she's sobbing. Not crying, sobbing. And she says, I just heard on the news that he's been killed. Speaking of Charlie Kirk. She then comes and sits down by the pool, puts her face into her hands and just sobs and sobs and sobs. Little 3-year-old granddaughter's never seen grandma like this, takes off the goggles, goes up back down those stairs, runs over and sits next to grandma and says, Grandma, can I hold your hand? What's happening, grandma? Someone has died. Who? Someone I love very much. To which she looks up at grandma's eyes and she says, is it grandpa? To which grandpa, who's swimming 20 feet away, says, no, honey, it's not me. I'm over here, remember? We were just swimming. She just couldn't imagine that grandma loved anyone else. And I love that picture of sympathy. Stepping next to someone and holding their hand in grief. Now for many of you this week, it's all over the news. Maybe you're just grieved. This is one more week of a shooting and you just wonder, like, what's wrong with this world? Others, you wonder about, well, I thought we lived in a different world. Like in Bobby Kennedy's shooting, everybody began to wonder, like, why is there violence? The guy just won the Democratic California primary and he gets shot that day and 2 days later. And here we are 45 years later, it's the same thing happening. And you just wonder, what's wrong with the world? I wonder where you find meaning and purpose. I wish there was a God who understood what I'm going through. The injustice of a world that people do terrible things to one another. And the Bible says God is that uniquely in Jesus. He can sympathize with us. He has entered our world. Well, it's not just good for family development, it's not just good for ourselves, it's good for business. The amount of research that shows that empathy and sympathy helps make you a better leader is all over the place. I'll say it different ways. Empathy helps navigate organizational crises. Empathy helps navigate organizational crises by building appreciation and esteem. There's one. Here's another one. Empathy is the top leadership skill, boosting innovation by 61%, engagement by 57%, and retention by 50%. I'll give you one more. Empathy, that kind of empathetic leadership, it fosters trust. Man, my boss cares about me. Our team cares about each other as human beings. It reduces burnout, because we make adjustments at times. It enhances team performance during crises. Who would have thought empathy would be good for business? And that's exactly what God did. In fact, as I was researching for this series, I came across a podcast that Chris shared with me of a woman named Megan Fifus. And she talked about growing up in Cincinnati, of all places, and how she would listen to Fred Rogers and watch Sesame Street, and she was a shy little girl, and how Fred Rogers, his faith, his puppets, helped bring her out. Well, it turned out her dad pastors a church up in Blue Ash. So I called up the church and talked to the executive pastor to kind of get a little bit to know their story. Well, she was very, very shy, and she wanted to kind of push herself a little bit. And so they had a puppet team that began at church to tell people about the love of Jesus. And so she got trained on a puppet team, and she's a phenomenal singer. So she didn't just want to do puppets. She learned how to be a ventriloquist, and she can have like Whitney Houston level singing of the puppets toward each other. But she talked about those puppets gave voice to her shyness, put her in front of a crowd. She began to talk to people about what going on inside her life and what really mattered and how they could find purpose and meaning, and doing this in a little church up here in Blue Ash. And then the show got bigger and bigger, and she got out of her shell a little bit more, and she eventually got onto Jay Leno's show, and she won America's Got Talent, or at least made it quite a distance. Then the last couple years, she got an opportunity. Following the example of Fred Rogers and how he inspired others, she actually got to be one of the voices of one of the puppets on Sesame Street. I don't know if we'll ever know just how far the influence of Fred Rogers goes. And she's currently working on a project to be the new Cinderella, a project to inspire young girls. So we've talked about archaeology today. As we end this series, it kind of sets up our next series. Starting next week, we're going to do a series called Raiders of the Lost Cities. I'll be dressed up like Indiana Jones, and we're going to look at evidence, archaeological evidence for actual things. It's one thing to Chad, you're kind of like hitting my heart here on this series. Is there any evidence for this? We're going to show actual evidence that hits your head and your heart starting next week in archaeology. As we finish today, what if we all discovered the power of careful digging? God doesn't come in with a bulldozer and bulldoze your life. He carefully brings love and grace and acceptance. Oh, you're not ready for that yet? Okay. When you're ready, I want to talk. Kind of like Lady Aberlin did with Daniel the tiger. It's okay if you need some time. I'll be back after the picnic. I want to talk then if you want. Discover the power of careful digging. Now, you hear this paragraph I'm about to read typically at Christmas time. But it's not specifically about Christmas, but it does predict what God would look like when he comes to earth. It says, for unto us a child is born, okay, he's going to be a child, unto us a son is given, okay, a son, the government, this whole administration or value system will be on his shoulders, he's going to bring a whole new value system to the earth, and his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, but also Mighty God, Everlasting Father, I thought he was a son, Prince of Peace. How in the world could be a child and a son and a father and mighty? And then in the person of Jesus, you find this Sudoku level of predictions that seem impossible to ever connect. And Jesus fulfills every one of them. But have you ever thought of God as a wonderful counselor? Rejoicing when you're rejoicing. Grieving when you're grieving. Celebrating when you're celebrating. Digging in and wanting to understand what you're carrying and what you're going through, or the pressures you're under that other people wouldn't understand, the accusations thrown at you that you don't deserve by a culture that seems to demonize anyone different from them. Now, Jesus presents himself as a high priest, a mediator, but also a wonderful counselor. And Fred Rogers certainly found that at the end of his life. He was asked one time, "Do you ever get angry?" He was a grandpa by then. He said, oh, yes. He goes, just the other day I came home and my grandkids were playing with squirt guns when I arrived, and I told them, now don't get grandpa wet. And they kept getting closer and closer to me. It was 3 feet away, then 2 feet away, then 6 inches away. And finally, I just blew up. Mr. Rogers blowing up. That's it! Put the guns away! That's it! I'm going home! That's Mr. Rogers getting mad. He said, Mr. Rogers, I went home and I realized, you know what, they did not squirt me. I entered their fun and kind of spoiled it when I stepped in. I actually need to call and apologize. So Mr. Rogers, as a grandpa, called to apologize to his grandkids, because he lost his temper. And he wanted to show that he had not entered their world, and he had set expectations on them that they were just having fun outside. And so he, even in his later stages, was still forgiving and owning and being humble. When he retired, when he found out he had stomach cancer, he started to really wrestle with mortality. What happens when you die? Not that he hadn't before, but it became really top of mind. When he retired from the show, his wife said he used to walk on the beaches of Nantucket, and she wondered if he was depressed. And he said, I just miss my playmates. How much fun we had together. He started reading up what the Bible says happens at the end of your life, and the Bible gives a metaphor. It says that God is like a shepherd. Remember Jesus saying he's a shepherd? And we are like sheep. But at the end of life, you're either a sheep or a goat. What's the difference? Well, a sheep knows, has a relationship with the shepherd and follows him. Not perfectly, but follows him. A goat pretends to know the shepherd, but doesn't really. They do their own thing if you ever had a goat. Chew on whatever they want, eat whatever they want. They want to do their own thing. The shepherd's only important if it helps them with their agenda. And Fred Rogers, at the end of his life, his last words, his literal last words, is he turns to his wife and says, am I a sheep? To which you're like, if Mr. Rogers ain't a sheep, who's a sheep? But he still didn't know. Or at least he was still asking, at which she affirmed him. But I want you to know today, you're never going to live up to, I'm never going to live up to Fred Rogers' example, and you don't have to. You can know you're a sheep because you have a personal relationship with the shepherd that is God. It's not based on what sheep do for the shepherd. The main message of the Bible is what the shepherd did for you. He came and he died for you to pay for all the wayward ways, all the ways in which you weren't empathetic and you weren't compassionate. You wanted your own thing. You stepped on people inappropriately. God came to do something amazing for you and I, to be that mediator we talked about, to have spang kanis amai for our condition of not being able to do what we know we're supposed to do. So maybe this morning as we finish the series, you want to let God do some careful digging in your life. He's going to do it carefully and lovingly. He's going to say, I'll forgive whatever we find, but let's pull some stuff up and let's look at some of those motives and let's stop pretending that things are as good as they really are. I want to bring some forgiveness and leadership into your life because I want to live the kind of life that Fred Rogers lived. And he would say, I had to have somebody do it for me. Let's pray, and I'll invite the band to come out and do this last song. Maybe you want to pray, just something like this. Say, God, I invite you to be my archaeologist. Come and dig in. Reveal to me some hidden treasures I don't know about myself. Reveal some rocks that I need to have removed in my life. And I want to have a personal relationship with you. Jesus, I believe that you could be my shepherd. I believe I could be your sheep. And I invite you to be a wonderful counselor and come into my life. In Jesus' name, amen. Yeah, I love this next song because I really feel like this next song is almost like God talking to us and saying, wherever you are, whatever stage of life you're on, ups or downs, I want you to know everything else is going to fall apart. Other things aren't going to be trustworthy in your life. But me, I will always have your back.